This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 81.
We started talking about these intractable problems or these persistent problems, and they resonated universally across the Learning Forum CLO Council. Things like governance. How do you govern the learning function for efficiency, alignment, consistency? We started talking about this topic of the value of time. Everybody, every CLO out there is dealing with the pressure to justify the consumption of time, the biggest investment that goes into learning by orders of magnitude. We also kept hearing over and over about the speed at which an L&D organization can move, what we're now calling skill surging. These problems were just like, okay, persistent generation after generation, and kept coming up over and over. And when you scan the thought leadership, we saw this disconnect of the problems that were persisting generation after generation were not the ones that were coming out in the body of work that's driven by this thought leadership engine that dominates our industry. And so this idea of taking back the thought leadership agenda and putting it in the hands of practitioners that are experiencing something very different than what they're being fed by this $400 billion L&D machine.
When it comes to learning and development, why are we so focused on new, bright, shiny objects? How can you improve the return on investment from L&D initiatives? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. My guest this week is Noah Rabinowitz and Brian Hackett. Noah is the Vice President of Talent Development at Commonwealth Fusion Systems. And before joining Commonwealth, Noah held leadership roles at Moderna, Intel, Deloitte, and Korn Ferry. Noah is one of the best chief learning officers in the business, and I think you will agree with me after you listen to our conversation today. Joining Noah is Brian Hackett, who's the founder of the Learning Forum. Brian saw a need for senior executives to be more innovative and active in their own learning, and as a result, he founded the Learning Forum, which is a member-driven learning organization for senior executives from Fortune 500 firms and key government agencies. Currently, over 300 companies are part of the trusted peer network at the Learning Forum. And today, Noah and Brian are joining us to talk about the CLO Lift Initiative, which is bringing together chief learning officers from major global firms like McKinsey, PepsiCo, Starbucks, MasterCard, Comcast, just to name a few, who have come together to collaboratively tackle some of the biggest and most systemic problems that face L&D functions, including the governance of learning functions overall, skills and upskilling, and the value of time. LIFT is an acronym for Learning Innovation for Tomorrow. But it's also about lifting each other up, lifting up the L&D community, and I think that's exactly what will happen once the CLO LIFT team starts to release their position papers on these important topics over the next few weeks. Make sure to follow the Learning Forum on LinkedIn so you don't miss any of these papers when they drop. So what can you expect in my conversation with Noah and Brian today? Well, we're going to discuss why L&D needs to stop being driven by trends and start being driven by common standards, what CLO LIFT stands for and what they hope to accomplish, how HR leaders need to rethink the value of time when it comes to investing in learning, why skill surging is a faster and better alternative to implementing a skills-based organization, why you should be refining, not reinventing your L&D governance model, and Noah's advice to next-gen L&D leaders who want to increase their influence and impact, and much, much more. Noah, Brian, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you both?
Good.
Yeah, doing good. Great to be here.
Excited to have both of you on here to talk about a really important topic. How do we elevate learning development and really be evidence-based and solve some of the biggest challenges that are honestly facing L&D leaders and talent leaders across the board? So I'm excited to have both of you on here to talk about not only what you're doing, but CLO LIFT. But no, I want to start with you and really start the conversation just by discussing and getting your perspective on the current state of learning and development. From your perspective, what are some of the business challenges that heads of learning and development are facing and that's impacting their priorities for 2024?
Yeah, let's start with the fact, and this might be a theme in the conversation today, that the state of learning and development is fully unknown because there are no standards in learning and development. Everybody's running a different race. You can make a case for something being good or something being not good based on a new set of criteria that come out just about every year. The industry is driven by a trend cycle, and trends are trends. They don't indicate good or bad. They just indicate new. When we look at the state of the industry, the big question would be, how would we even know if it's doing better than it was 10 years, 20 years, 30 years ago, if it's doing worse? There's no real report card. There's no real set of shared standards like there are in many other industries, finance, for example. There's no standards board. So that's a hard question. I can't really give you a better answer than to say, big question mark, that's part of the problem we're trying to solve here.
Yeah, I think it's an astute answer, though, because to your point, there aren't really standards. It's a flavor of the month, and it depends on that leader, that organization, where they want to focus. But there isn't a consistent standard. And I think, Brian, that's why with your organization, the Learning Forum, you pulled together a group of chief learning officers, and you come together to create what you guys are calling the CLO Lift Project. Tell us what CLO Lift stands for and what you guys are trying to accomplish.
Yeah, LIFT stands for Learning Innovation for Tomorrow. And the objectives of this group, which, let me just tell you how we got started. Noah came to us with this idea about all these intractable problems at L&D, put that out to our members, and right away had over 15 CLOs saying, I want to help. And what's interesting is when we form working groups, people don't really work. They come, they help, they talk. This group is actually writing papers and working. Pretty amazing. But the objectives were to, first of all, look at these persistent problems that have lasted over generations, take back the thought leadership, the L&D industry, get back to the foundational and fundamental thinking that needs to happen and get away from the shiny object syndrome, and generate some new thought leadership with practitioners. And that's why we had this group of just practitioners. And then at the end, we wanted, as far as learning innovation for tomorrow, we want to help solve these problems so the next generation of CLOs doesn't have to just carry it on like everybody else. So some of the firms that are in the group, just so you get an idea, are Comcast, Colgate, DaVita, Inca Group, which is IKEA, Intuit, MasterCard, McKinsey, MMC, Oliver Wyman, Pepsi, Starbucks, Takeda, and Visa. So those are the size groups that are in this, and the CLOs are from those groups.
So Brian, thank you for walking through there. It's obvious that you've got some world-class chief learning officers involved in this, but what I think is really cool to your point is that a lot of time in the networking groups, you're bringing people together to share best practices, learn from each other. There's so much value in that. But the fact that they're saying, I've got a day job, but now I'm going to have my night job, my weekend job. I'm going to work on how do we solve these challenges that frankly have plagued our industry since learning development's been around. And so kudos to you and all the CLOs and Noah for taking this lead to get in this and go after it, because there is a lot of fluff in our field. There's a lot of bad information. There's a lot of pseudoscience and there aren't standards. So I'm excited to get into this a little bit more. Noah, tell us more about how you're perceiving this too and what the impetus was for you to get involved and have this passion around this.
To build a little bit on what Brian said, through multiple conversations, we started talking about your first question. Is the L&D industry better than it was when it started 50 or so years ago? And the answer was, we don't know. We started talking about these intractable problems or these persistent problems, and they resonated universally across the Learning Forum CLO Council. Things like governance. How do you govern the learning function for efficiency, alignment, consistency? We started talking about this topic of the value of time. Everybody, every CLO out there is dealing with the pressure to justify the consumption of time, the biggest investment that goes into learning by orders of magnitude. We also kept hearing over and over about the speed at which an L&D organization can move, what we're now calling skill surging. These problems were just like, okay, persistent generation after generation, and kept coming up over and over. And when you scan the thought leadership, you don't really see much on them. What you see is more of the what's new, the trends. It's going to be this year. It's going to be this way of talking about it. It's going to be this kind of organization. Or even at a lower level, it could be there's a new simulation. There's a new framework. There's a new methodology. There's a new coaching model. There's a new taxonomy. There's a new piece of technology. And we saw this disconnect of the problems that were persisting generation after generation were not the ones that were coming out in the body of work that's driven by this thought leadership engine that dominates our industry. And so this idea of taking back the thought leadership agenda and putting it in the hands of practitioners that are experiencing something very different than what they're being fed by this $400 billion L&D machine. That resonated with people. And they said, yeah, let me be a part of that, because what it does is an opportunity to be influential beyond your organization and to try to make an effort to leave our industry in a better place than we found it, instead of just kicking these persistent problems down the road once again and leaving them for our successors. So it's really an effort to improve the industry as a whole, by really focusing on the things that matter the most to the people that are doing the hard work of being a learning leader.
Well, I'm glad that you and the other CLOs and Learning Form are tackling this challenge, because I think it's right. We've been focused a lot on the symptoms. We're like, oh, well, time's an issue. Well, let's do micro learning. Let's make it happen faster in the flow of work. Well, it's like we focus on the symptoms, not the root cause. I think you guys have some papers coming out, and you're going to be publishing this in a lot of different areas because you want to share the work. So I know that people will be able to really dig into it. And I believe you guys have 10 unresolved challenges facing learning. We can't get into all 10. I mean, actually, I would love to be honest, but no one's going to listen to that. I'm geeky enough to do it. Maybe not all of our listeners are. But I want to talk about the first challenge. And that first unresolved challenge you guys have talked about is really time to learn. Tell us more about why we're prioritizing time to learn and what we're hoping to solve this challenge.
And I think, Noah, you should probably bring up that we first called this too busy to learn, because we thought that was the problem.
Yeah, we've gone through a discovery of our own. When we first started talking about this problem, we were, like Brian said, calling it too busy to learn, because on the surface, what we were hearing from the CLOs is they kept hitting this wall at the learner level. Hey, I'm too busy to go to that, do that, think about that. And exactly like you said, JP, what the industry does to respond is like, make it smaller, make it micro, make it nano, make it in the flow. So we'll accommodate that kind of symptom. As we dug into it, I mean, we're talking months of discussion and iteration and research and true root cause level analysis. What we realized is the actual problem is multidimensional. It's how we use that time, the value that gets created in that time, the opportunity cost of that time when you're thinking about other ways you could use that time. By orders of magnitude, time is the biggest investment that's going into learning. Way out, it exceeds any of the hard cost investment that we put into these programs. And so that naturally the business pushes back and says, is that the best way to invest this 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 hours? And every one of the CLOs said, yeah, I'm having that problem making the case for the use of time. I think we should ask for more time, but I'm having trouble getting it. And all of us in learning, we believe, yeah, let's make time to learn, right? You know, that's important. So it's just this universally shared problem where there is no real solution on the table. It seems to be persistent year over year over year, despite the trends. There's an industry that's trying to solve one of the symptoms, which is just make it smaller, just be less invasive, just make it smaller in the form of like micro wasn't small enough. Now we got to do nano. That's kind of where that problem came from. But it's evolved. As we've even thought about it for 6 months now, it's evolved and it's gotten into the value of time, learner engagement, how we demonstrate the value of that time and make a business case around it. But it does offer the opportunity to become a standard, because the ROI debate has been going on also forever and has not resolved itself in any way. There is no standard around ROI whatsoever. Maybe the standard could become the consumption of time, and you need to create a value proposition that's greater than the cost of the opportunity cost of that time. That's a simple standard. It may not be the holy grail, but it's a simple standard that every learning organization could theoretically adopt.
Well, I love that you're trying to build a standard around this, because I think what happens is we end up in these basically arguments with our business leaders versus saying, you know, here's the common way we think about this in the industry, and then have that conversation and kind of lead versus coming and sort of blocking punches as you go, right? Because I feel like that's what sort of happened. You go in and like, well, we don't have time for this. And now you're on the defensive versus being offensive with the standard around time. Because it won't go away. Time is our most valuable resource, but it's also critical to us actually making learning happen. So this is a big one for sure. Hey everyone, after a quick break, Noah, Brian, and I will be back to discuss the other two big challenges in L&D, what they call skill surging and governance. Stay tuned and we'll be right back. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well, and as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call, as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. The next unresolved challenge is related to skills and how organizations can keep up with high demand for upskilling and skill development. Tell us more about what you're hoping to solve related to skills and how you're framing this one up.
I'm going to let Brian take this one. This is his baby.
Well, we started talking this as surging skills, with the idea that what we're seeing with companies doing these larger skills-based organization projects is they're trying to boil the ocean and make every skill count and all that jazz, which is not effective. And the real issue is, how do you understand the skills that the business needs and be able to be there when they need it and get those skills to the business, or maybe even predict what they need to be ahead of the game? And L&D has the opportunity to do that. My take on the skills-based organization stuff is that it probably is the biggest fad L&D has seen in a while since competencies. There's a lot of goodness in the work these people are doing, but it's being led by vendors and consultants that are not really understanding the root cause problems. We are trying to get companies to figure out how to get focused on that aspect of doing the right skilling in the right place and doing it faster. Otherwise, you're just going to have these huge projects that take years to build and they go on the shelf like competency models did.
Yeah, Lyft is all about first principles. When we talk about skill surging, we ask the question, what if you just went to the CEO and said, tell me the 3 to 5 skill areas that are really top of mind for you, or that we think are going to be top of mind for us because they're going to be the most important, and then surge those skills, which means you bring material impact to the organization at a pace that exceeds or at least matches the pace at which the business or the markets are moving. It's like time. We're saying there's an opportunity cost to time, so we need to deliver greater value than the opportunity cost of that time. With skill surging, we're saying you got to move as fast as the market demands on a short list of key prioritized skills. And what's getting in the way of that is these definitions of skills-based organizations and ontologies and taxonomies and frameworks and marketplaces. And it's like we're crushing the concept under the weight of itself. So Lyft is about saying, again, let's go back to first principles. What are we really trying to do as learning professionals with skills? We're trying to upskill the organization, close skill gaps. And we're trying to do that fast. And to do it fast, you need to bring a certain set of capabilities. You need to be influential. You need to align with the rest of the HR ecosystem and the business. You need to know what those skills are. You need to, like Brian said, anticipate them. You need to have an infrastructure that can move quickly and be ready constantly. And a lot of these ballooning skill-based organization trends are kind of going in the opposite direction. They're creating so much technical debt that nobody knows what to do with it anymore. Like, we forgot the problem we're trying to solve.
Yeah, so well said. And I also think that we're looking at skills-based organizations or some of these technologies as a magic wand. It's the magic bullet to solve everything. And what I'm hearing you say, which I really am a big fan of, is there's always this sort of tension, right? We want to develop all. We want to have development and opportunities for people to develop across the entire organization. But really, skills, targeted skills, should be for some. So I always talk about that. It's development for all, but targeted development for some. And that's where I'm hearing you say is, what really matters to the business? What are those 2 to 5 skills or capabilities that we have to have? And what people, right, so we can win? How do you bring that to market faster? Because we also don't have unlimited teams and unlimited resources, to your point, right? So if you're going off and putting in a skills-based platform, but it's not solving the business problem, a year from now, the CEO is going to say, what happened? Why didn't you get the results we expected? And you'll say, well, I was putting the skills-based system in. I didn't actually solve what we needed. And that's a recipe for disaster for your career as well.
The skill surging concept is really focused on speed. The time problem area is really focused on value and unlocking value in using a standard. The skill surging one is really about a short list of skills and going as fast as you possibly can on those, because it's a competitive marketplace and speed matters. You always have to ask yourself, is you're building a learning organization or the learning infrastructure, like, does this enable me to move fast? Because the business moves fast. And when we talk about governance in just a second, you'll see that there's a relationship between value, time, and governance. Because what happens is, if the learning organization can't keep up and is getting outpaced by the marketplace or the needs of the business, they will always go somewhere else. What happens then? You create fragmentation, you disjoint, you become misaligned, it becomes semi-adversarial, like you said. Now we're trying to enforce rules or enforce use of tools or frameworks or applications. And that's where it really begins to break down. And that's where you see shadow organizations. I mean, shadow organizations pop up for a reason. They're not just happening, they're happening because there's some need is not being fulfilled. Anyway, I'm not sure if that answered your question or not, JP.
No, it's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think not only to kind of refocus this back on the speed part with a real targeted focus on the skills that will matter, but to your point, all this works together, right? We need time to learn. We need to move quickly. But the last one that you mentioned that we're going to talk about that you guys are really tackling is, I think, the most important challenge facing in learning development organizations. That's governance. It's not as sexy as skills, but tell us more about why this is so critical and some of the challenges you're seeing in governance today.
Governance is a huge one. And it was one that, as we polled the CLO Council, resonated universally. And we even had multiple members of that council that, when we asked is who's working on or has recently worked on governance, it was almost everybody. So it's this universal topic that it's like either recently we had somebody in and they gave us a deck on governance, or we are doing it currently, or we're planning on doing it. What we've noticed is that there's constant pendulum swings in governance models, from basically centralized models to decentralized models to federated models. A lot of that is driven by the turnover in the CLO seat, because a new CLO comes in, what's one of the first things they want to do is examine the governance model. It's not working. Let's put in a better model. When we went back to root cause, we started realizing maybe it's not about finding a better model, but making the model you have work. People push back when we say this, but that takes like a decade to do. It's a big, complicated, multivariable problem that doesn't have any short solution, because you have to align technology, stakeholders, councils, steering committees, funding mechanisms, decision-making systems, design systems, content management. Like, there's this whole world of infrastructure that has to function for good governance to occur. And if you're just flipping those things constantly, you're actually suboptimizing your own governance model without even knowing it, in the name of improving the model. And if you can't get governance, good governance in place, you're never going to be able to create that value. You're never going to be able to move fast. You're never going to be able to demonstrate it. Again, there's a need for a standard. Instead of every organization out there trying to do its own governance model, it would be amazing to have a checklist that says good governance consists of these 10 things. It may not cover 100% of the variables, but good governance typically consists of alignment with key stakeholders, a coherent technology stack, a well-defined learner experience, a clear vendor management system so that we can rationalize our vendors, methodologies and frameworks that are make sense to the people in the organization, a funding system that operates at the cycle that is needed to be able to surge the skills that are most in demand. Like, you start seeing how this is all connected. And in theory, the L&D world could say, this is what good governance looks like. Not, we're doing this governance model over here, and we're doing one over here, and we're transforming ours over here. And so again, the idea of a standard comes up, you know, and people roll their eyes when they hear the word standard, like a standards board. Oh my God, you're going to try to do that. And it does cause a reaction, but there is a need. There's a reason why standards exist. They do play a really important role.
Yeah, and standard may be a little bit, some people react to a standard because it feels like a rule they have to follow. But what I hear you saying is frameworks, guidelines, principles for effective governance if you're centralized, decentralized, et cetera. I think this is a really important one that I think first-time CLOs underestimate when they come into an organization, not knowing how that's going to work. But to your point, all this has to work together to be able to deliver a great learning experience, to get the funding, to get the priorities right. What are you guys learning so far? There's some best practices or frameworks are coming out of your research at this point that you can share with us around governance?
Yeah. What we're learning, first off, is that governance is a giant topic. If the average tenure of a CLO is 3 to 4 years and the time it takes to actually install healthy, functioning governance is 10 years, then you can automatically see a disconnect there. What we've done in our research is we've gone out and looked at what makes for good governance. We've uncovered things like reducing friction between the business and the learning organization. We've uncovered things like funding systems. Brian's always asking the question around who owns upskilling in things like AI or digital skills. Where is the accountability and the ownership, and how does that accountability manifest itself? You could even ask the question in governance, like, where does the CLO report to? There are cases that we've looked at where the CLO is reporting directly to the CEO. And you can make a strong argument for that. Governance is reporting, funding, decision-making. That just can't flip so often that you're creating whiplash. And what ends up happening is that the learner, the end learner, loses confidence in the learning organization because they're like, it's flavor of the month. It's these things are just, I've heard people say many times, just wait this one out because there'll be something new following it. And that newness, you have to ask yourself, is that newness driven by just the desire to have something new, or is there actually value being created with whatever that new thing is? And I'm not saying keep everything the way it is. Like, I'm not anti-innovation, but we do have to ask ourselves if the innovation that's occurring in this industry is well-governed and well-understood, and if it's just new for new. Like, has new become the proxy for better? I don't think it necessarily is. I think we have to question that.
Yeah, I love that.
The other things you learned were you really have to have strong sponsorship, which in this era where learning and talent management are becoming one thing, and a few other COEs and HR are part of that, to me, it's the CHRO that should be the ultimate sponsor and decision maker around governance. And you really don't see that a lot, which is surprising. I think the other thing that's happened because of so many vendors bringing in their products in all parts of the organization, there's no vendor management. People are turning around and saying, well, we're using that tool. We're using that tool over here, or we're using a different tool, and there's no consistency, and cost efficiencies are horrible. And so you're really just wasting money and time because you're not literally talking to each other. So I think the vendor creep is a big part of what's happening to cause the need for better governance. And then related to that is the learner experience, because if you're getting so many different ways to learn, some companies literally have like over 80 different things thrown at the employees under the rubric of learning. Again, it's not going to help anybody.
Yeah, it's a great point to underline, Brian, around vendors, the different things coming out of learner and how that impacts our credibility, because all that is really related to governance. The learner may say, oh, there's a new tool, there's a new program, but the reality is it's poor governance that's causing some of those things down cycle and not allowing you guys to get the skill surge you want and the real time to learn and focus. So I'm excited for this work. I know that you'll be releasing a lot more of your research and talking more about this, and I think sharing it. I think that's terrific. I'll encourage everyone to go check a look at all the research around these 10 unresolved challenges and what you guys were doing. But I do want to switch gears a little bit. And you talked about this, Brian, at least alluded to it. Many CHROs listen to this podcast. And so what do you hope they take away from your work on the CLO Lift project in our conversation today?
Well, I guess the main one is their role in being the leader of all this, because it does take that level of sponsorship and support and budget. And they're the ones that control that.
It's an important message to your point. You know, really owning and sponsoring it from the CHRO down is critical, because learning does have to have some sponsor at the C-suite and be able to say, this is why learning is important. These are the skills we're trying to develop, et cetera. Noah, for you, what are some recommendations you have for L&D leaders who want to elevate their function in terms of how they're perceived by the business? And you've been doing this for a long time. What are two or three things that kind of stick out for you around some of the best CLOs and why they have influence and impact?
A couple of the things we've learned through CLO Lift is the power of the community. So one thing I would recommend almost immediately for a new learning leader is join a community of your peers and get into difficult problem solving, because we do have persistent problems that they will inherit from those that came before them and that they will leave for those that follow them. We as a community can do better. If we go back to first principles, it's really easy to get distracted by this thought leadership machine. But we have to remember that it is a for-profit industry. New sells. I would also challenge new learning leaders to really ask the hard questions of, is new equal to better? And are there persistent problems that I'm facing that I share with other CLOs where I can be part of the solution, not just in my organization, but across our industry? And that's what we've seen with things like governance, skill surging, and the value of time, is that they're just persistent. They have not really improved over decades. In the name of improving our function, may actually be adding to the problem. So if I'm enamored by a new shiny object and I see at a conference or somebody's doing something really cool, it's easy to say, yeah, I need to do that too. You can bring that thing into your organization and say, look at what I'm doing. I'm bringing something really cool and I'm innovating. And again, I don't want to be anti-innovation, but if you're doing that and the foundational problems are persisting, it's like the analogy we use sometimes. It's like putting a coat of paint on a house with a cracked foundation. So new learning leaders need to ask themselves the question, do I want to just be putting another layer of paint on this house with a cracked foundation? Or do I want to actually do the hard work of lifting that house up out of the ground and pouring a new strong foundation that's built by me and my peers because we share common problems? When Brian mentioned LIFT is an acronym for Learning Innovation for Tomorrow, but we also talked about lifting each other up, lifting up this community. It has a sort of a double meaning. That's what we're hoping for, is that there's this inspiration to go back to first principles and let's actually start creating some standards so that we can know we're making this thing better together.
Great response, Noah. Thank you for that. All right. My last question for both of you is, what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years? Brian, we'll start with you.
I think the one word is opportunity. It's a big opportunity for HR leaders, CHROs, because the way the world of work is changing right now, they're not the ones making that happen. They're not going to succeed. Their business isn't going to succeed if they're not doing this learning stuff better, faster, more focused. So it's an opportunity this year.
Noah?
I think I'll use a hyphenated word, but problem solving. I just think that there are opportunities to solve some really big problems. But problem solving is a skill in and of itself. It's a discipline. I remember back when I was in consulting, we used to have a term we used to throw around, no problem, no project. Getting really clear on what are the problems we're trying to solve and then going after the big ones. Why shouldn't we be the generation of CLOs that decide to tackle the big problems? I'd love to see us continue to emphasize problem solving across our industry.
Well, I love it. I think the opportunity is to solve these problems you guys have identified. So I think CLO Lift will do that. Noah, Brian, thank you for being on the Future of HR podcast. It's a great conversation.
Thank you, JP, for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Noah and Brian for sharing what the CLO Lift initiative is and how we can improve some of the most fundamental challenges in learning development. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share a podcast with at least one other person, or even better, please leave a review on Apple and Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Peter Fasolo, CHRO of Johnson & Johnson, and Michael Arrett, Head of Global Talent Management at Johnson & Johnson. In my conversation with Peter and Michael, we'll discuss why values matter in building great organizations, how having a talent function creates value for the organization and team members, how to best leverage your head of talent and what you should expect, and the trends that will impact the future of work and much more. This was an amazing conversation with two amazing HR leaders and one that you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.